So, Eric, you've done some incredible things when it comes to politics in the state of Utah, being with a third party and a third party candidate. The thing that comes to my mind is you're being able to be included in the Utah Debate Commission's televised debate, along with the Democratic and the Republican candidate. What did you have to go through in order to be allowed? Because there is a selection. You don't just get to go on television and debate your two-party candidates. What did you go through? How did that happen?
Well, we had a poll high enough, so that meant that we really did the same thing as someone might do with a primary, where you actually start a lot earlier, got out a lot earlier. We were doing our marketing much earlier in the month of August, so that we could poll high enough. And I think the reason that they do that polling is so that there's some sort of a threshold. You already saw, even with three candidates, there was less time to hear what the candidates had to say. So I do favor that process that they go through to select the people. We polled high enough, and that got us into the debate.
Was that one of your goals, one of your objectives as you started this campaign?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was step one. If we weren't far enough to do that, then we weren't far enough to really make a significant impact in the final election.
So let's talk about that night. How did you feel you did debating Rob Bishop, the incumbent, and the newcomer Lee Castillo?
I think we did well, and our feedback has been really, really good on that. And it was a bit of a watershed time for us, and where we were able to get out and show what our thoughts were on the issues relative to the other two candidates.
And lessons learned from that experience?
For sure, relax. It was amazing to get up. You're spending so much time on issues, making sure you're prepared. The big part of the preparation was a lot condensing things that you're answering on a regular basis that you normally answer in 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes, and having to say it in 60 seconds, which takes a lot out of the answer. So, yeah, it was a good experience, but the anticipation was a little bit. It wasn't quite as difficult as the anticipation working up to it.
So, what does it say to you, the fact that you are able to poll high enough and being with a fairly new party here in the state of Utah and be able to get to where you were able to get? What does that say to you about the Utah voter?
Well, I think it's not just the Utah voter, but we're seeing more and more. The majority of people polled are interested in a third party. You have 47% of voters that are independent voters. There's this big hole in the middle, and I think it showed that hole was there. And then on top of that, after the debate, we received the endorsement from the Salt Lake Tribune, and from the Standard Examiner as well. So for those editorial staff to go out on a limb, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that we were in the middle, that we were seeking common ground, that we were looking to pull Democrats and Republicans together. Those were big victories as well, and I think it all goes to that same type of idea.
Yeah, so I wondered, as you were meeting with potential constituents, what your sense of priority as far as what they wanted to see in a candidate, how they want things to be operating in Washington, D.C. Was there something that stood out to you?
Well, there's a lot of resonation around, number one priority for us is government reform. Campaign finance has gotten to be where it's just a big machine of corporations sponsoring candidates. And I noticed Spencer Cox texted something out or tweeted something about that today. This big political machine that's gotten just a little bit out of hand. So that resonates well, along with that, term limits and other things that just kind of try to even the playing field and get good discussion going.
Yeah, you started to talk a little bit about term limits. Still something that you feel important?
Yes. Some people have said, well, the term limit is voting people out of office, but it's really not that way. There's such the incumbents traditionally, I just saw a chart, and they average about 35 points ahead of challengers. And when you look at it, let's just look at the franking privilege, which is the ability to send out mailers to constituents. You know, Rob Bishop sent that out 60 days before ballots came out in Cache County, a mailer on the taxpayer dollar. So those type of things just make it so incumbents have a big advantage. They have a big advantage in fundraising as well, because the PAC donors know that they're most likely to win, so they put the money behind them, thinking that'll pay dividends. So I think the only way that we're going to really change that is term limits. And then the other thing is look, I know 30 people, you probably know 30 people that would make better representatives than myself, Rob Bishop, or Lee Castillo. But yet when someone goes out and they spend a quarter of their lifetime out in Washington, that's kind of hard to get those people out and get more ideas in Washington.
And much of your campaign was self-financed.
Yeah, and I don't want to overlook, I think there was two periods, if not one period, and a period of a quarter, in which we outraised Rob Bishop in the state of Utah.
In addition to what you contributed.
Yes. And so definitely don't want to overshadow the fact that there was a lot of great individual. Well, I didn't take any PAC money. That was a decision we made early on. But individuals contributed and really made a difference for our campaign.
So we talked a little bit about lessons you learned in doing a live televised debate against an incumbent. What lessons do you think those who are considering running in a third-party situation like the United Party, what lessons can they learn from what you've been able to accomplish during this race?
Well, the one thing that I just feel really good about the fact that, I could fully keep the integrity of my politics in terms of I wasn't signing up for a platform on the right or a platform on the left. Now, there's difficulty in that because it required me to really go in and examine the issues and learn the issues really well myself, as opposed to, just getting on board with all this 24 set of ideas. So that's a difficulty, but it's really refreshing to go out and learn and try to understand. So and it's not going to be as easy as a road as going with one of the parties, but I've got to say, I still feel like it's a great place to be.
And we don't have any official results as of yet, but if it ends up you don't go to Washington, D.C., do you think what you've learned through this process and your experience and kind of being someone that has succeeded in this attempt to run a third-party race, do you feel like those skills will be useful? And what do you see yourself doing in regards to politics in the future?
There's different things that you become passionate about. I definitely like some of this, the reforms that we've talked about, and I'm excited about that. As I look at, particularly at our state level, there's a big lack of representation by women candidates, and that's something that I'm getting pretty excited about. I've met a lot of great potential candidates that way that I'd love to help succeed. So I imagine staying involved one way or the other.
And so maybe using some of these experiences to help other people run a race?
Yeah, sure. Sure, absolutely.
What would the first thing be that you would tell them if they were considering running a race and not running as a Republican or a Democrat?
Oh, my. It takes more ground game. And that includes even running as a Democrat. I watch how anyone other than a Republican how hard they have to work. And Republicans quite often during a primary work pretty hard, but there's a different level of what they put into it. Any challenger from the outside, the level that they have to put into it is different, and it takes a lot of effort. I can imagine helping people both third party and R or D that are great candidates for our state.
And what will you be doing tonight as you're awaiting the results?
Well, we've got a gathering going on at my place, which is probably less than a mile away from you. And we're just gathering now. We've been watching the results. We've got the national results going, so we're watching some of what's going on in Florida, Texas. We're watching independent candidates and third-party candidates around the country as well. So we've got this turnout that's just been really crazy, and we're not sure if that's to our advantage or disadvantage. We knew early on it was to our disadvantage because of the average age going in today was about 58, which is twice the average of the average Utahn. And so we were really heavy Republican. And then we saw a switch today, and the polls were backed up with probably the average voter age of 30 today is what we were guessing.
And as you're watching the results in Florida, I know last I heard one of the Republican seats had gone to a Democrat. Are you hoping for some major changes in Congress as far as who leads the majority?
Well, we're looking for anything that will be healthier in terms of getting things done. I'll tell you the outcome we were hoping for is 217 Republicans, 217 Democrats, and then we get elected, and we're the tiebreaker, and we could call everybody and say, you got to get together, and we got to solve these problems. So that's what we were looking for. I think anything that can create a healthy discussion and some balance. Haven't been particularly happy with the executive branch of government lately. I'm not sure what that dynamic plays out to be here in the future.
You know, I don't know this, but has there ever been a third-party candidate elected to Congress?
Yes. And you have, there's a very close alignment between an independent and this particular type of third party that with United Utah, which is more of a centrist party. And you have two independent candidates or two independent senators right now. You've had independent congressmen in the past. And, this would kind of harken back to some of those people that have been in the past. Vermont, Maine, Alaska, there's particular states where you get a handful of independents in those legislative bodies.
Does it help for you to look at those candidates and what they did to become elected, or is Utah so unique that you really need to focus on the issues here and what the people here want?
It's interesting in terms of them both pulling that off. We went out to the Unite Summit, which was Unite America's, not related to United Utah, but it's independent and third-party candidates. There was a ton of candidates out there. And, Governor Walker, who's an independent from Alaska, we were really excited. There's an independent senator from Colorado, and she's really done a good job at bridging the Democrats and Republicans and forcing them to the table, and very popular in that role. And so there's some role models in that respect.
Now, you talked about your dream would be if, half were Democrat, half were Republican, and you came in as an independent, and hoping to make some change, being able to bring people to the table. Do we know if that's been successful in the past? It may not have been those same ratios, but have...
Well, we've seen that on some state levels, mm-hmm. and the example being Colorado. But again, Maine has some great independents up there.
All right. Well, anything else that you might want to add, Eric? Any more about your thoughts on the participation in what has been an unusual midterm election?
No, you know, we like I said, I was a little bit concerned until today. The unaffiliated vote was low. The age was high, and I think we're going to see some big changes as of today, which we're pretty excited. But you know, we've got different levels of success. The highest in the state was Jim Bennett last year with 9%. So that's one number we'd like to beat. Perhaps we can beat the Democrat, and you know, there's some wild shot that to take it all. But we realize that there's different levels of success.
I just want to clarify, when you talk about those age levels and participation, are you excited about that change because of your particular race, or do you see that as a reflection of change in getting the younger voter involved?
Getting the younger voter involved has always been hard, and we kept hearing that there was more younger voters involved, but that the numbers weren't holding up for Congressional District 1 up here. It was a highly Republican turnout early on and highly young. Highly Republican and quite old at 58%, whereas the average age of Utah is 29, the average age of registered voters 48%. So we did feel like we needed more younger voters in the mix. We've got older supporters, but we needed younger supporters, so that was a big deal to us. And then we needed the unaffiliated to come out. There's enough unaffiliated voters to win an entire election, but they oftentimes don't come out as heavily as Republicans and Democrats.
So I would imagine now the challenge will be by you or your party to find ways to maintain that interest by the younger voter?
I think they're becoming they are frustrated, and what we have tried to communicate is this is the way that you can really make a difference. There are more younger voters than older. They just don't, well, potential voters, they don't register first of all, and then they don't vote, but yet they seem to be concerned with the direction things are going. So you asked me what some of the things I might work on politics-wise in the future. I think that would be another one. It's just trying to clarify what that voice, how to exercise that voice.
Well, Eric, it's been fun following you during this race.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having us on.